It is a sign of belonging to the men community. Outside Qumran there were people who chose to be clean-shaven. There are communities that never cut their hair. The Romans wear theirs description of Qumran short. For us, it is permissible at any length, as long as this is well-groomed and clean. Most prefer it about to the shoulders. If anyone left the community to go into the outside world, they were required to dress like the other people so they would not appear different. The outsiders did not wear white robes. They wore colored clothes with various headdresses. So in this way the Essenes were unique and would have been quickly recognized as they would have stood out among the others. The ancient writings confirmed these facts about their dress. It must be remembered that the Essenes were in danger when they were outside the walls. But as long as no one knew who they were safe. As Sadi said, we do not have blue skin. Apparently they could not be easily recognized when they dressed like everyone else. But when in Qumran, everyone wore the same uniform, so to speak. It would seem as though they were all absolutely identical, but they did have a method of identifying rank. They wore a cloth band tied across their forehead. These bands were different colors according to the wearer's standing in the community. It was like a badge of office so they could quickly identify each other's status. S, like the colligree, it is for the young students. The colligren, they are a seeker. They are above the student's level. They have finished that which everyone must learn, but they are still seeking more. They are still recently admitted. Their soul still thirsts for knowledge. They are still a student, but they are not a master. And there are the blue, which is the master. And there is the white, which is the elder. There is red. He is not really a member of any of these others. He is outside of this. He is learning, but perhaps for different purposes. This is for the outside students, as if he is only a visitor. The red shows us, though they are of a like mind, that they are perhaps not quite of us. It is really just the green, the blue and the white that are of us, and then the gray for the young students. D. Then if someone is wearing a red headband, they don't live there all the time? S. Well, it is not that they do not live here all the time. It is perhaps that they err from elsewhere to come to learn, to seek, to study. D. Then when they get through studying, they will go away again. Did they choose these colors for a reason? S. The blue shows a lot of the inner peace. It is almost up to the level of Jesus and the Essenes the white. The white is the ultimate in attainment. You are at total rest and have achieved all that must be achieved. The blue is just one step below this, if this is to be understood. These colored headbands were also worn by women since they were considered equal to the men and were also taught. He couldn't understand my surprise when I said, in some Qumuni soft-ties girls aren't taught anything. But how could? If a girl was not taught, how could she stay one with her husband or? I do not understand. We were very pleased with his way of thinking, which must have been against the popular Jewish customs at the time. This would explain some of Jesus' attitudes towards women. They had not been treated any differently in Qumran during his time there. If a woman was not a student, she could wear a scarf or a veil, according to her choosing. But mostly they wore nothing on their heads. At the time I was speaking to him, he was wearing green. It means that I am a student. I am one step below master. I'm not an unborn student, I am a searcher. The younger ones would we agree. During the session when Sadi was describing the living conditions of Qumran, Katie was in deep trance, but she suddenly and unexpectedly slapped her right cheek, surprising us. Nor soft-melly, outside of hand motions and gestures to describe some soft-thing, such swift motions do not occur. Later she began scratching the spot she had slapped. Sadi stated simply, the bugs are getting bad. I found this very amusing because it was so unexpected. He said they were mainly gnats, little flying things, but there were many types of bugs there in Qumran, of which locusts and ants were a problem. When I asked about dangerous insects which might inflict a poisonous bite, he said he did not know of any, although he himself was not into the study of lower life. There were animals raised for food, sheep, goats and oxen. But I got the impression these were not kept at Qumran. They were probably outside the walls or near Ain Feshka where the Agrocule soft-tree was located. We got into an interesting and fruitless discussion when I asked if they had pets. He did not know the word. This is often the case when I am dealing with people from another culture, they do not understand or have an equivalent word. I am always taken off guard because quite often, as in this case, the word is a common one to us. I often have to come up with a suitable description of Qumran 51 explanation quickly, and this is difficult. Try it sometime. I tried to think fast and find a definition for the word pet. D. Well, it would be an animal no one would eat. Someone takes an animal and makes it their own. They just keep it for their own pleasure, as a pet. S. This sounds selfish. How do we know that the animal has different pleasures from this? D. Well, it would be like a friend. S. How can an animal be a friend? It has not intelligent conversation. He seemed totally confused. I said, some people like to have animals with them. They live in their quarters with them. This does not sound very sanitary. We laughed. I didn't realize how difficult it would be to explain. No matter what I said, it did not seem to get any clearer. I asked if he knew what a cat or dog was. He knew the word cat, but not dog. Frowning, he said, I've seen jackals, pronounced yackles. I suppose this was the best mental picture he could come up with for the word dog. I explained that they were similar but not quite the same. I do not think that anyone could own a cat. This is curious. Why would someone want to have something as a pet that eats dead animals? I would not want one to live with me. They all have vermin. This is not good. Vermin carry disease. We use sulfur to keep them away. It was apparent I could not be able to define what we consider pets, so I went on. I wanted to know if there was any trouble with snakes in the community. He said there were many adders that varied in size. They ranged from quite small to quite large, several arm lengths long. They occasionally got inside the community and then they were killed because the bite of most was fatal. I was surprised by this admission that his people did kill sometimes. He had seemed so much against harming any of God's creatures and against any kind of violence. He said they would kill if there was a danger. I was still trying to find out if they would ever use any kind of protection if they were threatened. He had indicated earlier that there was something, but it was one of the forbidden topics of discussion. This time when I asked if there was anything else they would consider a danger, he again went on the defensive and refused to answer. Any time this happened, it was always best to change the subject. Jesus and the Essens. During my questioning, I often found that Qumran was far from primitive. I came across him once while he was bathing. He said this was something that was done daily, usually in the morning. The room of bathing was a large room where the bath comprised almost the entire room. There were steps leading down into the pool and there was an area to the side where there were benches for disrobing. They would remove all their clothes to enter the water. Many people, both male and female, would bathe at the same time using pumice instead of any kind of soap. The water came into the pool from somewhere underground. It was a steady flow, always being refreshed and changed. He did not know where the water flowed to because he said he did not design nor build the system, but he believed the areas that the water ran through were covered. I suspect if someone were to ask your average modern city dweller about their water system, they would also have difficulty explaining it, unless they had some reason for being involved with its workings. There were places in the community where the water came to the surface. The drinking water was obtained from two fountains. I thought maybe he meant a well, but he was quite emphatic in his definitions. He knew what a well was, and he said it was not that. It is where the water comes up from below and pushes up. It comes from the mountains, and comes up out of their ground. There is an area that is for storage of this water that holds quite a bit of water. It is square and perhaps as deep as a man's waist, and 1.5 again as many lengths as your arm stretched. During the hottest months, a lot of times they are kept covered so the water will not be wasted, and the dust will not get into foul them. The water was removed with buckets, they had only to reach down and dip it out. This surprised me because the area around Qumran is so arid. I did not think there could be a steady flow of water. How not so? With this close to the Sea of Death, there is water here. It comes from many sources. As long as it is not in the sea, it is all right for drinking and such. I wanted to find out if they had any sanitary systems that took care of urination or bowel movements. According to the Bible, Deut. 23:12-14, the people in Mosaic times were not allowed to do this within the city, as it was unclean. They had to go outside the walls, dig a hole and cover it up afterwards. Sadi was an expert on Jewish law, so I wondered what he would say about this description of Qumran. I wasn't quite sure how to word it. I had no idea what other cultures would find offensive. You know, whenever people have to urinate for sanitary reasons, would you have to go outside the walls to do this? No, there is a place that is used for this body function. It is a room that has several sections. Looking for the right word. Cubicles, in which you would urinate or have a bowel movement. I believe it is a pit system dug and air freshened. I'm not very sure about the method that they would use in taking it away. It was within the community walls and everyone went to the same place. There was water in these cubicles, but he did not know if it was also flowing water such as in the baths. S. There are things that are put in with the water that is there, to keep it fresh. D. Isn't it in the Jewish law that they have to go outside the city? S. I know not. And what if a man had to wake up in the night? He laughed. Would he then leave the city? So apparently all of the Jewish laws were not in effect among all of the people. It is doubtful that other cities in Israel had the wonders of sanitation and water supply that were present in Qumran. But the Essenes apparently had access to much informer soft hyphenation, possibly this type of engineering knowledge. When the archaeologists excavated the ruins of Qumran, they were amazed at the wonderfully complex water system they found. See drawing. There were two baths with steps leading down into them, several systems, as the scientists called them, and water storage basins. There were also many small canals connecting the whole system, which were probably covered over during the time the Essenes lived there. It is interesting to note that the scientists have assumed that the baths were open, while Sadi says they were enclosed within rooms and that the storage areas and the fountains were open. They also assumed the Essenes trapped water coming down from the hills during the very infrequent rains and stored it in this system. But Père Deveau said that during the 3 years he and his party were at the excavation site, water only came down from the hills twice. It is hard to believe they could have stored enough water to last for long periods of time if they had to depend upon the unpredictable rainfall. Sadi said the water was flowing. Jesus and the Essenes believe they had found a spring and routed the water to flow through the community. I believe that over the intervening period of 2,000 years something happened to the spring, either through earthquakes or natural ground shifts. There are known springs in the area, the most notable one at Ein Feshka, a few miles to the south. Why would the Essenes put their agricultural area by a spring and then build their community in a barren area? Also, when the Romans destroyed the community, it is known that they ruined the water system. Maybe they, through igno-soft-rants, closed off the source of the water. The archaeologists found the remains of what they called a sanitary system, some kind of cesspool. They also discovered the ruins of a building with cubicles, which they have assumed was a stable. Was it? As to Sadi's daily schedule, usually I would awaken with the sun, go and bathe, and then I would break my fast, study for a period of time and then begin lessons or go about the day's teaching, and break off again and eat midday meal. Then usually I would study. There is much I am in ignorance of. Then I have the evening meal and spend my evenings in contemplation. Do you have to rise with the sun? This is one of the things the scientists have assumed. It is just a matter of custom. It depends upon what you do. There are those who would study the stars. They would, of course, stay up all night and sleep during the day. If you are studying the stars, you would not get up and spend all day awake and fall asleep when the stars are out. There are those who work late into the night, but most of us rise with the sun. Is there any set time you go to bed at night? No, not generally. If there are things that you would have to do that would carry on late into the evening, it could be just studying. It could be speaking with one who hadn't been there for periods of time. Numerous things. If they stayed up after sundown, They obviously had means of producing light. I was aware that they used lamps containing olive oil in that part of the world. I had gained this information from other subjects. But I should have learned by now not to take anything for granted when using this method to delve into the past. While working with Katie, I never knew where an innocent question might lead. When asked about their lighting methods, his answer was unexpected and proved again that Qumran was not an ordinary place. Its walls held many hidden mysteries. We'd have either the lamps of oil or the lights that burned. Description of Qumran: when working with regression, you must stay alert and be ready to pick up and follow through on anything that sounds the least bit unusual. Since it is something common to their way of life, they will not elaborate unless you pursue it with questioning. You never know where it may lead. This is one of these examples. Why did he mention two types of lamps? S. Usually I use the one that has oil in it and then lit. But there are also the lights that have light with no flame. D. What is the power source? S. He had difficulty explaining it. I did not build it, I do not know. It runs off of a jar that it is placed on. The jar has some properties. It is placed upon a jar that has a searched for the word globe that comes off of it, that is lit. The jar is about so. He measured with his hands soft hyphen it looked like about maybe 5 inches tall. D. By a globe. Do you mean a globe of glass? S. Hesitated. What is glass? D. How do you explain that? Maybe you don't have it in your community. Glass is a material, but it's something you can see cons through. Like a pottery, but it is clear. This was difficult. S. Sounds interesting. It is somewhat like this, yes. I do not know how it is made. Harriet suggested the idea of something similar to a crystal material and he answered with an emphatic, yes. That would be similar to glass. At least it was a material that you could see through, so he had something for comparison. I asked if the round globe was like a sphere and he became excited that he had finally made me understand. But when I asked if a sphere was hollow, he became confused again. S. I know not about these things. I do not design them. D. But it sits on top of the jar, and the jar is pottery. Is that right? S. I know not. It looks of stone. D. Is there anything inside the jar? S. I have not taken it apart to find out. He was getting aggravated with my repeated questioning, but I wanted to understand how this strange device operated, if posse soft hyphen bull. For such a thing should not have existed. I wondered if it remained on all the time and could not be turned off. No. It is Jesus and the essence turned off and on by placing it. Either you have the type that you would place inside of another Duran, this would cause it to light, or you would have one that would be given a twist and then it would cause it to light. But it is never on constantly unless it is something you wish. I asked if he liked it better than the lamp with the oil. He said the strange one was much brighter and there was not the danger of fire. D. Are these made at the community? S. No, they are very old. D. They must have a great power source to have lasted such a long time. Are there very many of them in the community? S. There are enough. I have not taken count of them. They are everywhere. They are allowed to be where they are needed. In my research I found the description of objects that Berdovo, the archaeologist, excavated from the ruins of Qumran. Among the many shards of pottery he found a few stone jars and a few fragments of glass. Could they have been the remains of the lamps and not recognized for what they were? The thought of a jar working in this manner awakened a memory. I remembered reading something similar in one of Eric von Daniken's books. His works contain many unexplained oddities. I found it on page 174. Picture 252, in In Search of Ancient Gods. It was a picture of a small jar about the size that Sadi had indicated, and it showed someone inserting an oblong black metal object into the jar. The inscription said that it was a battery operating on the galvanic principle. It was very old, but even today 1.5 volts could still be coaxed from it. It is now in the Iraq Museum in Baghdad. There was more information on this device in Charles Bullitt's book, Atlantis, the Eighth Continent, Pi 39. The caption on a picture reads, Dr. Wilhelm Koenig, an Austrian archaeologist employed by the Iraq Museum, unearthed in 1936 a 2,000-year-old vase, 6 inches high, which contained inside it a copper cylinder set in pitch, and inside that an iron rod secured with an asphalt plug. This object resembled others in the Berlin Museum, some larger with a repetition of the cylinder settings. There is no clue to their function except that they were religious or cult objects. It occurred to some investigators, including Dr. Koenig, that these description of Qumran II percent. Li comma dot dot underscore and I semicolon colon equals dash apostrophe e tilde e slash I li r equals an r underscore n dot dot soft hyphen caret minus 41 f x t I backslash backslash l slash I a dot soft hyphen apostrophe r r s for ifkt, the community of Qumran Jesus and the Essens might be dry cell batteries which, understandably, were no longer in working condition after several thousand years. However, when they were exactly reconstructed and provided with a new electrolyte, they worked. This ancient use of electricity may, of course, prove only that electric power was used for electroplating metals with gold and silver, as is still done in the bazaars of the Middle East. But it is also likely that it was used for the illumination of temples and palaces, although its use disappeared before the middle epoch of antiquity, that of the Greeks and Romans, who used oil for illumination. Reference: Berlin and Iraq Museums. Mankind has become very smug, thinking he is the first to invent our modern conveniences. It appears that ancient man was not as primitive as we believe. They actually had many of these things. And since the blackout of the Dark Ages, we have merely rediscovered them. An intriguing idea. I wondered what other surprises might lie within the secretive and protected walls of Qumran. Chapter 6: The Government of the Qumran Community. According to archaeologists, the community was governed by the rules and regulations set up by a group of priests. Based on their translations of the Dead Sea Scrolls, they think the Essens had some very strict and seemingly cruel regulations. This was consoft hyphen trary to what I found. I did not think this sounded like the gentle and just essence that I had come to know, and Suddy's information proved that I was right in believing this way. Of course, many times the difficulty lies in the method and manner of translation. According to Suddy, there was a council of elders that set the rules to govern the community, did the judging and ruled on any penalties, etc. It was said that at one time there was someone like a chief in charge of the council, but no longer, since it was decided that it gave one person too much power. The elders were chosen by those in their area or field of study. The qualifications depended on how long they had studied in the particular area and how much knowledge they had gained. The number of elders on the council varied from time to time, but it was generally about 9 or 10. Depending on which area of study had an elder. I wondered if everyone in the community had a vote as we do in our democratic countries. He said it was discussed among the families, but only the masters and students in the particular field of study had anything to say about it. It appeared that the choice of the elders rested with the intellectual part of the community, the ones who were studying in the various fields. The ordinary worker would have no say, but a woman would have a say if she was a student. When someone was chosen for the council, it was a lifetime job, and there had to be a majority in agreement on any decision that was made. I wondered if there would ever be a case when they would want to remove somebody from the council. He said it had been done, but not within recent memory. Jesus and the Essens study had mentioned penalties, and I was surprised that such compassionate people had to resort to punishments. I wondered what they could be. There are a few minor ones. If an infraction is major, the person is put out of the community, but this is rarely used. It is only used in cases of violence, where another receives bodily harm. Any type of violence such as this. Violence is against what we believe. This is the only great punishment that there is, to be made to leave the community. And this would be for some very great wrong. Last time was when one of the students killed one of the others. So violence was possible even in such an ideal environment. I asked if he knew what had happened in that incident. No, we were not told the story. It was not ours to judge. It is his cross to bear, not mine. D. I would not think that your people would ever get that angry. S. He was just a student, he was not one of us. He meant that the offender had not been born in Qumran. He would have been one who wore the red band. D. What kind of punishment would be typical for a smaller offense? S. There is punishment from 10 for masters, yes. But this is between the two of them, the person who has done the wrong and the master he serves. As stated, the master would deal on a one-to-one basis and do what he saw fit. Sometimes fasts are required. Penance by studying certain things or the taking away of privileges. The archaeological translators believe the Essens were a really soft hyphen-jus order and the priests were the leaders, above everyone, the final voice of authority. Sudi said the priests would only have authority over the students they were teaching. They would not be higher than the council. D. Do any people ever leave the community due to dissatisfaction soft hyphen-shin? S. There are a few that leave for teaching purposes. But, why would someone wish to leave? The government of the Qumran community. D. I would agree with you, but I wondered if you ever had any people who were dissatisfied. S. It would probably be possible. I have not heard that it is not. But why would they? D. If they were unhappy and thought they would be happier elsewhere. Is it allowed if they wish to leave? S. I suppose. Indignantly, we are not slaves. We wear no chains. D. Then they stay because they want to. Is anyone ever turned away who wants to be a student here? S. Yes. Their purposes would be looked into by the masters, and they would know for what purpose this person wished to do this. And if they had any malice in their intent, they would be turned away. D. Has it ever happened that anyone gave them a problem, created any disturbance because they were not allowed in? S. Not upon recent knowledge. This is not to say that it has not happened. D. Do you know what would be done if this would happen? S. I do not know. I am not a master, it is not my decision. D. I was still trying to find out about their defenses. Do you have any way of protecting your community? I mean like weapons or anything like that? S. Yes. He became cautious and hesitated. Different methods. He said they did not use weapons in the conventional sense, but he would not volunteer more information. Then Harriet took a chance and asked, "Do you use the sound?" He hesitated a long time, then answered softly and cautiously, "Yes. I could tell we were on dangerous ground." He may have felt he had betrayed the confidence by revealing as little as he did. He seemed uneasy and I knew we should not pursue the question any further, even though I would have liked to have found out more. I tried to reassure him by telling him how wonderful I thought it was that they had no need for weapons, and that in most communities that was the only way they could protect themselves. He thought I was too curious. I told him we wanted so badly to learn, but it was difficult to find teachers. Of course. He said there were many teachers there. Our problem was our inability to question these. D. Does your community have any kind of rules that are different from the normal Jewish community? Jesus and the Essenes, how can I say, when I'm not that greatly familiar with the outside and their laws? I knew from the Old Testament that the Jews believed in animal sacrifices. But when I asked about this practice he spoke emphati soft hyphen kali against it. S. I do not sacrifice blood. Why would it be pleasing to Yahweh to kill something that he had created? This does not sound very logical. D. I thought you believed many of the same Jewish teachings, the Torah and the laws. S. They are part of belief but they are not the whole. D. But the Jews follow this practice of sacrifice, don't they? S. Yes. From my understanding of this, these practices were borrowed from other religions, as you would call them. They were not something that were in the original teachings. But we do not sacrifice. We would place and burn incense on the altars, and such things as this, in a form of sacrifice. But this would be the only thing. He was so emphatically against this that I decided to change the subject and asked about any festivals or holidays that his people observed. He did not understand the word holiday. This is unfamiliar, he said. D. A holiday is a special day that is different. S. You speak of holy days. Of course there is the Passover. Also the days of Atonement and Rosh Hashanah. It is the festival of the new year, new seasons,